We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Boys and Girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in Chicago, Illinois, Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
Chicagoland suburbs. I'm not going to take any sort of city cred. I'm all right. I'm wearing long dans right now because I got done shoveling a little bit ago, and I never like wearing long dans, but here we are. But you know what? I'm going to focus, Ty, on warmth. Warmth of spirit.
That's right.
Warmth of emotion.
Yeah.
And warmth of relationship. That's not English. But I want to focus on the positivity. We tried to use that audio Coco on our permafrost show. Today, we are thematic, and we are talking about love and the many forms it may take as it relates to college football. And you know what? Maybe you're feeling saucy. Maybe you're feeling loose, and you're going to tell me about your own life and your own views on love,
probably
past,
not.
Present,
probably
future.
Probably not. Yeah.
Everybody's expecting you to really be loosey-goosey about your your life. So I am very excited to talk about it. You formulated this show. I'm probably going to run into a different direction with it, as per usual. But I'm excited to do a Valentine's show because if not now, when?
If not now, when? Yeah, we've been living in the doldrums of college football, of life in general, over the last year or so. Think about where we've come from. Who knows what we're walking into in this new year? We need some positivity. We need to share that love, Dan. So Valentine's Day is upon us. This is the last show, at least, that we're doing before V-Day. And we decided to take a look back at 2020, to take a look ahead at 2021 and beyond, really, and just find the things that we want to give our Valentines to. This could be players, coaches, entities, ideas, concepts, you name it. Anything is within the scope of this very show. I thought of this idea thinking back to my early days as a Ute, Dan.
As a Ute?
Early days. What did you guys do back in the heyday, back in, what is it, Calabasas School District?
The Las Virgenes School District, yeah.
What did you guys do over there with respect to Valentine's Day in, like, elementary school? Anything?
I mean, you pass out Valentines. You have, like, a Michael Jordan Valentine that I'm sure was unlicensed or something like that, Tiny Toons. You get Valentines, you fill them out with your classmates' names on them, you pass them around, and maybe you put a little extra elbow grease into a Valentine that you really want to impress somebody.
A little extra sauce,
A little extra sauce. It wasn't Calabasas High. I didn't go to elementary school around Calabasas. I went to what's now a basketball superpower in Sierra Canyon. But I always look forward to it. I like a creative Valentine's Day, sure.
Well, let me tell you, back at the good old days of Wolf Elementary, Dan, we would tape a brown paper bag.
Oh, sure. Like the Simpsons, I think, did with I Choo Choo Choose You.
To the front or to the side of your desk, and you just sort of walk around, and there really wasn't a whole lot of emotion involved. It was kind of fun, though, to drop Valentine's and everyone's...
Get some candy?
Yeah, everyone's bag got a Valentine, some of those tiny candy hearts. So
did you like those? The powdery
heart? Oh, yeah. Oh, pump those directly into my veins.
Wow. Okay. I wasn't a huge fan. I like the chocolates.
But I thought, why don't we do the same thing with college football? Why don't we just, you know, metaphorically here, let's walk around the classroom and let's drop our Valentines in the bags of those college football things that we feel particular, I don't know, adulation towards, Dan. Does it sound like a good idea to you? Are you okay with this?
It's a great idea as I'm fixing. Oh, gosh. What is this called? A pop filter? This rustling you're hearing? Fixing my pop filter. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It sounds fantastic. I have a list of loves. You were very explicit. You said leather, discipline. You told me to come up with something with feet. I don't know what that means exactly.
No. We did have sounds, though. I told you to come up with sounds. As per usual, you picked out a cavalcade of sounds. We'll start with this one because I feel like we've used this many times over.
And don't forget, I'm also just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her.
We're all just a girl in the world, Dan.
That's true.
A girl in the college football world.
That was my first date, Notting Hill. Absolute really? First date of my life. Absolutely. So that would have been 1999. I think that's correct. 1999, late spring, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
So you have to tell me what college football things are you asking? I'm stretching this far too broadly. Tell me something you loved about 2020, or maybe going back to 2019, 18, 17, whatever. Tell me something you love that you still carry with you about like something that happened during a season or just in general.
Three words about the 2020 college football season. Cardboard cutout fans, Dan.
Okay.
As far as I can think back.
You love those?
As far as I can think back.
Mm-hmm.
In my storied career as a college football fan. As we all are. This was one of the great rackets of all time. One of the great rackets of all time. Right up there with the good old fashioned Keith Jackson retirement tour back in like the early 2000s. You remember that thing?
Of course. I mean, there have been a number of subsequent retirement tours since in sports. So maybe he was a pioneer in that regard.
When every school gave him an expensive gift to bid him fond adieu into retirement. And then he only sort of semi-retired. He's like, I don't know if he gave the gifts back, what the deal was there. But here is why I love this.
Okay. Why do you love cardboard cutouts?
Many schools out there would let you pay to have your very own cutout in the stands. Mm-hmm. And it was a cool concept because, look, you in many cases couldn't actually go to the stadium to be in actual attendance to support your team. So this was an alternative, another way to do it. But rarely were the cutouts actually shown on TV, which I'd imagine was part of the initial appeal. Like, oh, we can get a picture of ourselves on TV, in the stands. It's a great way to support the school, be a proud alum, blah, 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 blah. So I'm assuming, and I don't know this, I'm assuming that schools had to do something like send a hostage video of sorts to like show how your cardboard analog was standing out amongst a crowd of others. And I don't know if it was like an adopt-a-pet situation where maybe you had to pay more money to keep that investment nourished. But I love the concept.
Okay.
From the very beginning, I want to see more of it in the future. I think there's a lot of upward mobility here for creativity, Dan. And on the other side of things, let's be honest. Let's be brutally honest. Attendance is down anyway.
Okay, so you're saying cardboard fans in place of like the Oakland A's Memorial Stadium tarp.
Why not? I'm just saying
covering up swaths of seats. Okay.
There's a lot of creativity to be explored here. And this may be truly the only way that some schools can pack a stadium. So I love the idea. I feel like the execution was bungled a little bit, but it was a first year for trying it out. And I'd love to see this continue on into the future.
Yeah, some schools did a good job pulling it off. Texas had the McConaughey section, I believe.
That's right.
So there are creative ways to go about doing things. There were some issues, I believe, in Europe with some soccer sneaking some. I want to say Osama bin Laden had a cardboard cutout in a football.
That's an issue. That is an
football
issue.
Football situation of cardboard cutouts. But yeah, I like them plenty because we do see, I mean, at the Coliseum at USC, there's just the way that the stadium is laid out. They put generally a tarp because there's stands that's sort of on the grass of the stadium, of the field in traditional form. And so there's a tarp there. So maybe you figure out some sort of cardboard cutout situation there. Yeah. I mean, weather becomes an issue. If it gets particularly windy, we could lose Steve, yeah. Teresa.
That's a problem.
To a gust.
It's a problem.
And then I don't know if it gets super rainy or snowy. You just got to be mindful of the elements. But I think, you know, I think they were a net positive. Sure.
I thought it was a creative solution. It did give fans an opportunity to support the team, even if they couldn't be there in person. And yeah, they could do more with it. They could do more with it. So that's mine for now. I have many more. Let's go to you.
Valentine's Day. It comes every year, whether you like it or not.
Everybody's gonna love today. Everybody's gonna love today.
I'm trying to choose. And maybe this is something that falls under the resolutions. I don't know. But in paying attention to college football, it's very easy to get caught up in the national championship race in Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson, whatever. I am choosing to pay attention to the lesser cuts of college football.
Okay.
Your Flatiron Stakes, your Denver cuts, your Chuck Stakes, Ty. I did a little bit of research on cuts of beef. And something that I had discovered a few weeks ago when I was trying to catch up on things that I had missed or didn't pay enough attention to, especially in the wake of bowl season, is Dustin Crum.
Dustin
Kent
Crum.
State, Golden Flashes.
Right.
If I were to tell you right now there was a quarterback who was more efficient against his competition than guys like Matt Corral, Ian Book, Kyle Trask, Spencer Rattler, you say, wow, he must be a pretty big name. Well, I'm hoping so. Dustin Crum is fun. Obviously, Sean Lewis had a ton of success at Syracuse, as we mentioned in our last Permafrost show. And I want to say Kent State averaged almost 50 points a game, something like that this year. And don't pay attention to the defense. Did they give up 400 yards on the ground to Jarrett Patterson? Perhaps.
Yes.
Perhaps. But all the same, Dustin Crum was the trigger man for a very fun Kent State offense. I'm hoping to see more of that moving forward. I don't know if they open, but I know they have Texas A&M in the non-conference portion of their 2021 schedule. So I am hopeful. I am hopeful that they have a couple of haymakers in them to scare the Aggies into an entertaining game. So that's something I want to see more of. He was fun. He was a dual threat. He was accurate, has a nice compact windup, is sized well. He's a really fun quarterback to watch that I did not watch enough of during the regular season that you watch even a little bit of him. You watch a game or two. Also, are his stats aided by Brian Van Gorder? Potentially, yes. Potentially, yes. But also, he was really fun to watch, and I'm hoping to watch a lot more of him in 2021. So that was just a late in life love, Ty.
And he only played in four games this season.
Only four games. Yeah, small sample size.
Only played in four games this season, but he's returning for a fifth season. So he's played 4 years, but because of eligibility, can come back. So we'll see.
Yep.
I like it.
That's a love I have. It was almost how I felt about, and I had watched him last year, I guess now 2 years ago, Mikhail Malik Cunningham.
Yeah.
We're like, huh. After all is said and done, he had a pretty amazing season. Now, he took a step back and needs to clean up the turnover issues. But there was something about a quarterback coming on like he did. Certainly, Cunningham was in a Power 5 conference, so it's a little more difficult, and he's on a bigger stage with more pressures. But Dustin Crum, fun watch. Absolutely fun watch.
You know, interestingly enough, you bring up Mikhail Malik Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
And in studying up for this show, I stumbled upon one website talking about ACC quarterback projections for the 2021 season.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular rating system had Phil Jurkovec ahead of Mikhail Malik, which caught me a little bit by surprise. I'm a big Phil Jurkovec fan. I'm
all both about behind DJU.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Sam Howell, DJ U. I think De'Aaron King was third, and then maybe Djurkovic fourth.
Well, can I just go into De'Aaron King just because he's another one of my loves?
Oh, you
just
please. Oh, here, let me play really nicely.
Valentine's Day.
Play it again.
Comes every year, whether you like it or not.
Everybody's going to love today. Everybody's going to love today.
Continue.
De'Aaron King has had a weird, unfortunate career. And when he's been healthy, when he has been locked in, has been one of the most fun, electric players in college football. You'll remember he came in to Houston, where there was already kind of a logjam at quarterback. I want to say, was it Greg Ward was the quarterback when he entered into the fray? And he just did whatever it took to get on the field. Tom Herman and everybody realized that he was a special talent. And if I'm getting, is it Major Applewhite? Maybe I'm getting my years mixed up. But De'Aaron King was a return man, a receiver, a do-everything, all-purpose type player. Eventually was electric at quarterback. And then the Holgo era starts, and there's the weird thing of, you know, just getting a little bit beat up, and what is he doing? And Dana Holgerson's asking people to redshirt intentionally to build towards a better 2020, and that completely falls apart. Guys leave. Then he goes to Miami and has this pretty amazing year. It's just this bright spot at quarterback for Miami in a way that a quarterback has not been a bright spot for Miami in a long, long time. There have been decent seasons, but a guy who can make plays both with his arm and with his legs like that, that was sort of, in recent times, unheard of for the Canes. And then for him to go out like he did in their bowl game, getting hurt, it broke my heart. But knowing he's going to be back, and hopefully a healthy percentage of what he can be physically if he heals up all right, that warms me up a little bit. That gets me going because what, I mean, the receivers developed over the course of the season. I know the running game outside of him was pretty inconsistent for Miami, but to see him be able to make plays against literally anybody, I just cannot wait to see more of De'Aaron King in college football because he was such a bright spot to 2020, a very strange season all around, especially in the ACC. So, yeah, De'Aaron King is just a college football love I have, especially considering his rocky road. I'm hoping it turns out to be a happy ending for his story.
Yeah, the injury was a bummer. It was a huge bummer, but I'm glad to see that he'll be back. It sounds as if he should be healthy if everything goes well in time for the start of the next season. And that'd be a huge boon for the Miami quarterback situation, the Miami offense as a whole. So I'm with you. I thought about putting him down. I'm glad I didn't. So far, we haven't had any overlap, if you can believe it. My turn. Let's stay on that quarterback train. Why not? Let's talk about JT Daniels, my boy. Quarterback at Georgia. Okay. Speaking of quarterbacks, only played in four games. JT Daniels only played in four games, is coming off the injury, came over to Georgia from USC. A renowned recruit, Dan. I looked him up. A 0.9919 rating is what he got coming out of Santa Ana, California.
His junior year, no less.
Correct. That was the class of 2018. Mm-hmm. So we didn't see JT for a bit. Eventually we did. And again, took him a little bit to get going, but ultimately the numbers started to bear themselves out, started to prove why he won the job late when he was able to get out there, be cleared to play. 10 touchdowns, just 2 interceptions. The most notable stat was that he finished with a 10.3 yards per attempt number. That was nearly 3 yards better than Stetson Bennett. And significant, I thought, within the context of this Georgia offense, because as you may recall, they made a change at offensive coordinator, brought Todd Monken in. And at the time, we didn't know if it was going to be Jamie Newman or if Daniels would be able to play. But one of the things we kept reading about was that the offense wanted to be more vertical, that under the previous regime with the previous personnel, it was a lot more of this dink and dunk stuff over the middle. Jake Fromm was great doing that. He was efficient with the football, but they wanted to be a little bit more of a quick strike offense.
Hold on. Jake Fromm was great.
He was fine.
Words have meaning.
He was fine. I said he was great at being the game manager and dink and dunking over the middle. He was very efficient.
Okay.
He was good for what
they... I can't trust you using the word great if that's what we're going with.
He was great with a qualifier, Daniel.
Okay.
I'm not saying he was the second coming.
Is this like
Deshaun Watson? I'm saying he was great with a qualifier, great in that system.
Okay. So this is you breaking up with somebody saying, look, I think you're great.
Kind of. Yeah.
But.
Work with me.
For who you want to be, you're great.
He was fine in the system that they put him in. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Fine.
But when they bring in Todd Monken and they want to go a little bit more vertical, beginning of the year, we thought maybe it'd be Jamie Newman, but Jamie Newman opted out. Georgia was in a bit of a lurch. They gave it over to Stetson Bennett, who I think dutifully did a pretty good job for a chunk of the season until the team started to figure him out too. It wasn't until later in the year that we started to see this side of Daniels really air it out. And that 10.3 yards per attempt number, I think really shows what he brings to bear here. So I've always liked the kid. I continue to like him. I'm excited about what he can do with a full season at the helm of the Georgia Bulldogs. And I can never fully forget that mustache that's on his recruiting photo. Like, that was my initial, dare I say, attraction. Just so conspicuous to have that mustache as a high school kid.
Like, he was selling merch for Stillwater,
kind of,
and Almost Famous. Yeah.
Kind of. So, alas, here we are, folks. And JT Daniels, starter, headed into the 2020 season. Hopefully, he stays healthy, and I'm excited to see him more. So, taking my Valentine out, giving it to Mr. JT Daniels.
Do you have the sound, that heavy metal riff that we used to play in talking about Baylor's non-conference schedule? Is that something that you can procure? Is that something that you have within your reach and wingspan?
Yeah, if you give me if you can kill some time here.
Okay, sure. I am not here to kink shame. That is not who I'm about. People are into whatever they're into. I'm not implying that you are sexually into JT Daniels' abilities as a quarterback. But I do have a very specific reason why I want you to drop this sound. So when you do have it, if you can drop it, that would be exceptional to
the
me.
The only one that I think I have is back in the day we had a
like, it was like a
it was
something
like
that.
Big Ten West death metal.
Oh yeah, give me that one. Not Baylor, but yeah, give me Big Ten.
Mississippi State, South Carolina, Missouri.
Are the SEC teams JT Daniels played well against?
Listen. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm a fan of JT Daniels.
That's what a really good quarterback should do against Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Mizzou. Although, you know, Mississippi State had a pretty impressive defensive improvement this year. But now he missed Alabama and Florida and Kentucky and Auburn and, you know, some more talented defenses.
Pause.
So we'll see.
Pause.
Yeah.
If you are a Georgia fan listening to this podcast,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at your quarterback depth chart, you're looking at your offense,
sure.
who are you giving your Valentine to? Are you not giving it to JT Daniels?
Oh, no, whatever five-star is just committed for the 2029 class. That is the guy I'm most excited about. No, of course. I mean, I think George Pickens is a better offensive weapon than JT Daniels at this point. He would scare me more.
But we didn't see him until like the end of the year either.
Under Stetson Bennett, under the Bennett regime, George Pickens didn't really thrive. So certainly he needed an arm like JT Daniels to help maximize
his
potential.
We didn't see the full potential of George Pickens till the last couple weeks of the year, really, when JT Daniels got out there.
That's true. I need more JTD than I've seen, and we're going to get it. That's great.
Where are we going next? Give me another Valentine, Dan.
All right. I'm going to go with Ohio State defensive mortality. Something I loved about 2020.
I'm also just a girl standing in front of a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Asking him to love her.
Very emotional.
Yeah.
Talking about the Ohio State defense. Continue.
Yeah. The way that they were vulnerable in new ways against Indiana. Though I say defensive mortality because of also how the national championship game went, but everybody's going to get gashed by the 2020 Alabama offense. That's just, Devontae Smith was otherworldly, and will remain otherworldly, hopefully. So there is something about Ohio State and the talent that they've amassed and the way that they've run away, quite literally, from their conference to see, and I don't want parity. I don't want everybody in the Big Ten going 7-5. I'm great with Ohio State winning the conference nearly every year. But there is something nice about Michael Penix and Whip Folger and Fry Fogle, whoever, demolishing this Ohio State secondary the way that they did.
That's right.
That made for good TV. That was a one score game that the Big Ten championship game went into the third, almost fourth quarter as a game because of how well Northwestern's defense was playing against Ohio State. I like that element because there is so much down about the Big Ten in terms of Minnesota taking a step back, Michigan taking a step back, Nebraska not really coming into where Scott Frost had people imagining Nebraska would get to, Penn State taking a big step back on offense, Michigan State starting all over again. It's easy to see why Ohio State would win every game 56-13, and that they didn't this year, I hope carries on. I don't care who wins these games. Again, I'm okay with Ohio State winning this conference most years. I just want competitive games. And that's what we got with, you know, Michael Penix bombing down the field and Northwestern playing well for a long time in that game. So I hope to see more of that. I hope to see more of that and not just have 56 5-stars in Columbus have their way with the rest of that conference. So that's something I did love, and I hope to see more in the way of competitive games in that conference.
As a bolt-on, because you mentioned Indiana.
Could you give a bolt-on?
Yeah. Can we talk about the Indiana Hoosiers for a second?
Sure.
What a real joy it was to watch them this year. To see them, do as well as they did. Goofy down year for a lot of teams. Obviously, the Big Ten East was not the version of the Big Ten East we've come to know and love.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that Indiana stepped up, it sucks that Penix got hurt. But at the same time, the way that team fought the entire duration of the season was a real joy. And sure. I got to be honest with you, week one, if I picked Penn State or Indiana, but
right.
I seem to remember saying to you that don't sleep on this Indiana team. This is a good Indiana team, and they're going to fight. They're going to play hard even if they lose. They won that game. Maybe they shouldn't have. We had that controversial call towards the end, but nonetheless, what Indiana did this year, I am really hoping that Tom Allen can continue to build on that because he has been building. And that would be a nice story for college football in the Big Ten. Not like the Big Ten East needs any more contenders, but right. Indiana's improbable rise at a time when the rest of that side of the conference was down is something that I would love to see pay dividends for them in the recruiting game.
Sure. I think Tom Allen resonates with people, and he's hired well, obviously losing his offensive coordinator last year to a head coaching job at Fresno State. And certainly with his defensive background, we expect this defense to keep developing, but no, one of the absolute most fun teams and stories to watch in 2020.
And it just feels like he's been building it the right way.
Sure.
It feels like it's been a slow burn as opposed to, one of the other teams that I'll bring up here in a moment or two, which sort of came out of nowhere, a fun story in and of itself. But Indiana, it's been a slow burn to get to where they are now. And I don't know. I had a lot of fun watching them. I hope it continues.
Okay. I think that's a good answer. Good answer.
It comes every year with
Coastal
like
Carolina. Let's talk about Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina. I have something. I have a bolt on for Coastal Carolina for you.
Coastal Carolina and its improbable run to an 11-0 regular season. They didn't lose until the Cure Bowl, which is a good game against Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Only been an FBS program since 2017.
Wow.
This is their fourth year of being an FBS program. First year went 3-9. Next two seasons went 5-7. This year, 11-1, led by Coach Jamie Chadwell, led by their freshman signal caller, Grayson McCall, who is excellent, just excellent. Mm-hmm. 26 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions, 33 touchdowns in all, if you count in the 7 rushing touchdowns he had something like 569 yards on the ground. So really a dual threat kid, played really, really well. I know on some of the NCAA 14 streams that I've done, Grayson McCall, I would contend, had better stats, according to whoever put this roster together, than like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And like somebody thought very highly of him even before he was more of a known quantity on the national level.
Such a competitive internship.
Coastal Carolina doing what it did this season was one of those rare shreds of optimism in an otherwise goofy year that, frankly, we know this from our download numbers. A lot of folks were ambivalent about college football this year. But Coastal Carolina was one of those stories that, regardless of where you fell on that spectrum of should they play or should they not play, Coastal Carolina was a fun story. A fun story. Learning that their name was the Chanticleers was a new one for a lot of college football fans. We heard from them.
Yeah.
And having them be even ever so vaguely in the college football playoff discussion was, I thought, a ton of fun. Beat BYU in that game that I like to talk about, coming together only 60 hours before they kicked it off.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the best game all season. I don't know where it goes from here for Coastal. I'd like to think that it stays at this level. My intuition tells me probably not, that this might have been a once in a generation type thing, but they still do have Grayson McCall, and they still do have their excitable coach, Jamie Chadwell. So here's hoping that it stays at this double-digit win level heretofore, but we shall see.
And they were more than a Cherith Cute story. They were fun to watch. That offense with all of its heavy option influence and elements was crazy fun to watch. You know, you talk about the BYU game. My bolt-on for Coastal is the return of themed T-shirts.
Oh,
and having the mullets versus the Mormons.
Yeah, man. Good call.
Harkening back to the Catholics versus criminals. Criminals versus Catholics. Catholics versus criminals. Notre Dame, Miami.
Catholics versus convicts, yeah.
Or excuse me, did I say criminals? Convicts, yes. I am all in favor of not only quick turnaround scheduling, which is fine. I mean, non-conference games don't do nearly as much for me as heated rivalries in conference. So it's fine, the quick scheduling. It's cool. It was nice, especially in a weird year when you have a hole on your schedule to pursue that kind of glory. Don't think too much about what I say. I can appreciate the fun of turning around those T-shirts and getting that excitability in Conway, South Carolina.
There is so much here that we can unpack with Coastal.
Sure.
Of course, there's just the general story. Going 11-0 regular season, 11-1 overall after the loss in the bowl game. The theme T-shirts is another angle. The sweet field, the teal field.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be a trend moving forward, but it was fun to just come to know about that stadium in Conway, South Carolina.
Yeah.
You mentioned the offense. I'm glad you brought that up, because for those who haven't seen, if you took the year off and didn't see Coastal's offense, I would describe it as a great combination of every cool trend in college football offense right now. It's got a little bit of everything, right?
Definitely.
That is fun as hell.
And especially with the threat of that option for Grayson McCall to drop back and hit dudes in stride. It was a ridiculous offense to watch. Had a great time. And they played some, this wasn't a team that beat up on nobodies either. They beat App State. They beat Louisiana. Like, this is a team that, you know, for lack of a better term, they paid their dues. I loved it.
And then on top of it, there is that scheduling element, the 60 hours before kickoff thing, which, look, I don't think that's going to be a trend. That was an extreme example in an extreme season. Mm-hmm. But it does call into question this practice of scheduling teams like 8 years out. Can we do better? Can we get closer to a flex scheduling situation? I don't know. I'd love to see it. It was one of the things in the buildup to the 2020 season that I was quasi excited about, that we might have more potential for stuff like this. And by and large, the conferences poo-pooed that idea, but it did work out for Coastal and the Sun Belt and BYU as an independent to pull it together on a moment's notice. So I don't know. We'll see if there are any longer lasting ramifications of that one, but all around a fun story following Coastal in 2020.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I love, and this is an annual thing, and I guess it can be placed onto a specific story this offseason and upcoming season. I love the imagination of, ooh, what's he going to be able to do, this new coaching hire with this guy, with this team, with it, like what we saw, like, ooh, Kevin Sumlin with Khalil Tate. Oh my gosh, what? Kirk Sharaka with Jahad Dotson. Like, I don't know how many people are having that conversation.
Sharaka.
You got to give me some notice.
I had to get it in, Ty.
Yeah.
There is that element of the tantalizing possibilities. What's Chip Kelly going to be able to do in UCLA? Actually, that's another love of mine. Yeah. I don't need to get too far into it, but a competitive Chip Kelly offense. Dimitri Felton was fantastic. DTR was good. Greg Dulcich was a nice story coming up. He was unstoppable for a number of weeks at tight end, but there is that tantalizing potential and ceiling. And this year, it's what can Texas be running that Alabama Sark offense?
Can he mold a quarterback?
Do they have a Devontae Smith on that roster? And I say all of those things, and it sounds like I'm being tongue-in-cheek, but I really want Texas to be fun. I opted out of Texas last year. I couldn't take another slow-developing crossing route thrown behind a receiver by Sam Ellinger. I couldn't watch it anymore. And who was the one that kissed Wendy Peppercorn in the Sandlot? Was it Smalls?
Yes.
I can't take it anymore. So I felt. I am hopeful. I'm optimistic. I want to be excited about Texas games week in and week out, not because they're more talented, not because they have more money, not because, oh, the Red River Shootout is always fun and weird. No, I want to see 63-15 scores in the Big 12 because I want to get excited about huge Big 12 games involving Texas when I know they're just going to play to their level of competition with Tom Herman up and down, and that's going to be that. And I want something new. I want novelty. And I'm hopeful that given how Sark recruits and develops talent, and I know it's always tricky when the head coach is calling plays and also running an offense, the track record's not always amazing, but I am hopeful that we have entered into a new level of entertainment of Texas football. I want that tantalization to be real.
Speaking of which, I was tagged in a couple tweets from our friend over at The Athletic and Fox Sports, Bruce Feldman. He didn't tag me, but others read the tweet and tagged me because he wrote an anonymous report. Anonymous in that he talked to some coaches about...
Well, it's former Texas coaches, right?
Yeah, right. Coaches that are evaluating now what the situation looks like for Steve Sarkisian at Texas. And there was a line from just anonymously named Coach 2, who gushed about Hudson Card, quarterback prospect for Texas. Quote, Hudson has a chance to be special. He's ridiculously good. He can really spin it, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
can really spin it, makes good decisions, has a lot of it factor. But really being able to spin it is the operative phrase there. And I think I'm with you. It's always like weird combinations of coaches with personnel. And we see it at
Lane
all levels.
Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss.
Yeah. Like, what can he do with that, like, recruiting situation, mm-hmm. right? Like, it spans the full gamut of players, of situations. It's just...
scheme, narrative, yeah.
There's a lot there, and I think the imagination takes hold, especially in the early goings of a new regime when we obviously don't have much to go on and mm-hmm. just kind of going off previous experience. So I'm with you. And I am excited to see Sark at Texas. I'm excited about another year of the Texas is back joke.
We have, I don't know if we did this on Fantasy Things or this was just a proposed fantasy thing, something where I always like when an announcer makes a reference to this guy only got two offers.
Yeah.
And he almost ended up playing at and then unintentionally insulting, you know, Delta State.
Yeah.
He almost ended up playing at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. This was a banner year in retrospect for, wow, he almost had to go to play at Boise State.
Yeah, yeah.
Both Brock Purdy and, now I'm Zach Wilson, excuse me, almost had to play at Boise, which is a good school and has had a ton of success and is a great place to end up. But those two stories were both pretty incredible. Brock Purdy and Iowa State breaking through, culminating in that Oregon win. So I hope to see more of fun clones football. And Zach Wilson absolutely demolishing teams and, you know, obviously making his way to the NFL. So I like that crossover element of those two guys that anytime a quarterback has to bet on himself and hold off on making a decision and hope for that last second offer to come in. I think that was the case with Kirk Cousins almost ending up at a MAC school and then got a late Michigan State offer. Like those stories. I like those stories of guys just holding out and saying, you know what, I'm waiting for a better situation.
Betting on myself.
I like that. I enjoy it.
Yeah. By the way, Zach Wilson, I saw in the latest PFF mock draft going number 2 overall behind Trevor Lawrence.
Wow.
Seems good high, but yeah. Okay. What else you got, Dan? Hold on. Let me play this. Play this sound here. Just let it play a little longer than usual before we hit the fade out button. Give it to me.
By the way, do you know anything about LaBouche?
Nothing.
Just in terms of they're a duo that was assembled by a German DJ. I was like, man, LaBouche has a bunch of hits. They're really fun. I'm going to go on Wikipedia. And then I found out it's super tragic.
Oh.
It's all really tragic. And I felt terrible. And they're, so it's a like a DJ and a singer, and the singer passed away in a tragic plane accident in 2001. I had no idea. I need to better educate myself in terms of turn of the century pop music.
This
and
is supposed to be an upbeat show, Dan.
Sorry. I love LaBouche all the same. But shout out Melanie Thornton all the same. North Carolina running the ball was a true love of mine because
Oh, yeah.
We had heard so much about Sam Howell, and Phil Longo running this air raid and coming over from, we had Sam Houston State and Ole Miss, and he was bringing this, especially after what the 2019 season looked like, and throwing the ball a ton, and there were moments that they ran the ball well, but having, I mean, I like to call them Michael Carter Williams, but Michael Carter and Javonte Williams just explode onto the national scene. In terms of, I don't know if a team maybe outside of Alabama throwing the ball did any one thing better than North Carolina and running the ball as consistently and as powerfully as they did. That's something I'm extremely hopeful for because how many teams can claim that sort of dominant balance at their best? Not many. Absolutely not many. So that was a really nice breakthrough for me, and I hope to see more of it moving forward.
They were incredible on the ground.
Yeah.
Don't sell them short. We talk about Alabama and the potency of its offense.
Yeah, they had the balance for sure. Yeah.
Even they didn't rush for as many yards as North Carolina. Had more touchdowns. But it goes Alabama 37 touchdowns, Army 36 touchdowns, obviously. Right behind them, North Carolina with 35. 2,800 yards as a team. 492 rushing attempts. Average 235 yards per game.
Yeah. Exceptional. An exceptional breakthrough from North Carolina, who ran the ball fine a couple years ago, but it was a very odd year in the ACC, especially there were some down defenses. that's what dominant attacks should do. I loved it.
Michael Carter, Javonte Williams combining for 28 touchdowns between them and
not too close shabby.
To 20, what is that? 2,400 yards almost. So not a bad effort.
Do you love, and I don't say this tongue in cheek, I don't say this with any sort of malice. You'll have to believe me, but I promise you that's true. Do you look back fondly on the memory of Notre Dame beating Clemson?
Yes.
Is that something you love to this day? Not that it means something important, but is that something you still cherish?
Well, the reason I didn't put that game down on my list is I figured it'd be too cliche. I didn't want to.
No, I mean, but your name is on the show.
47-40 in overtime. That was a big win for them. Now, I know it didn't go well in the ACC championship game. I know it didn't go well in the playoff against Alabama. But that was a momentous win for Brian Kelly, even if it didn't have much staying power, even if it was against DJ Uiagalelei instead of Trevor Lawrence. To get the monkey off his back was a big deal.
Yeah.
And as Notre Dame fans, we had been waiting for a game like that for quite some time. And again, not to say a little bit of that wasn't soured with the way things ended, for sure. But just to have that in the photo book as something that happened, I think is meaningful.
So, I always just like breakthroughs, right? That's still a good example of a breakthrough. Or just reversing course, not necessarily in a rivalry game, but a big matchup. Florida beating Georgia the way that they did. And I know it was Georgia with Stetson Bennett, and you know it was perhaps closer than the score indicates. But I like breakthroughs. I like when a team, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, where we have this long history or recent history of a team owning a matchup. And I love that Kansas State owning Oklahoma continues. I like those. I like when it doesn't break through. Oklahoma's still looking for that Wildcat breakthrough. But those are the things I enjoy about the sport, where as soon as a fan base feels ownership over another, and to have that flipped, I think is great. I think that is something I'll always look forward to within the sport. So there are a number of examples of that over the course of the season, but that's just something, that's my college football kink. So I still, even though I huffed and I puffed and I said that game means nothing in terms of Notre Dame's playoff resume going into the selection show, you still have to cherish those moments in a vacuum. It's great.
And you know what? It's a competitive landscape on the recruiting side.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they lost badly at the close of the year to both Clemson and Alabama, you can still recruit on 47-40.
Sure.
You can still recruit on that, and you can still say we beat Clemson.
Well, it's not even saying we beat Clemson. It's saying here is the way we beat Clemson. It's we tested Clemson deep late in this game, and you can see what happens when we have that element of our offense cooking. Now you, 5-star receiver, can be that answer for us.
Exactly.
And so who was it? Avery Williams, is that his name? I forget the
Avery
receiver.
Avery Davis.
Avery Davis, excuse me, who caught one of the huge catches in that game to help seal that win. That's the element of this is what we can be with you. This is what you can do to shine for Notre Dame or whatever the situation is recruiting wise. But you need to have that proof of concept. And Notre Dame, even though things ended poorly in the ACC championship game, the game counts. That Notre Dame Clemson game is in the record books.
So, trivia question.
That's a good thing.
Because I know you're into such things. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, future.
Here are Notre Dame's regular season opponents. I'm not going to count the ACC championship. Duke, South Florida, Florida State, Louisville, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Clemson, the aforementioned Clemson game, Boston College, North Carolina, and Syracuse. Of those games, Dan, of those 10 games that I listed, which one was played in front of exactly zero paying fans?
BC, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, Boston College didn't have fans this year. I remember that specifically. I remember shots of that stadium. They had the cutouts, if we want to bring that full circle. But yeah, BC did not have fans this year.
Excellent. Excellent.
Or fans in the stadium, excuse me. No problem.
Do you have any others?
No, I have a question for you to round out the show. I just, because we're talking about things we love and we're talking about Valentine's Day and love and passion and all sorts of those things, will you just give me a relatively deep dive into your first time? Sorry. Your first time attending a college football game or a big college football game. Something formative.
Formative.
I want you to, yeah. Were you nervous?
I was at.
Did you wear the right thing?
Okay, settle. I was at.
Were you prepared? Yeah.
But, well, one of my first college football games that I can remember.
We're pushing 40, and this is what we do with our time. Yeah.
In 1989, my mom took me to the Notre Dame-Miami game.
Mm.
In Miami. So this is at the old Orange Bowl Stadium.
Did you have family down there? Why did you go
no,
on the road?
We just went.
Just because it was a huge game. Okay.
It was a huge game, and she did it as a birthday present to me.
Nice.
It was like a big deal. And it ended up being a huge debacle because like the travel agency, when they were still a thing, travel agencies,
mm-hmm.
At the time, she like gave her card to these guys over the phone and they stole her credit card. It was like a whole bordering on identity theft type of situation.
Yep.
But we found out about it after we got to Miami and went to this game. And, you know, Notre Dame lost the game. The only touchdown they scored, I think, was a defensive touchdown from Ned Bolkar, if you remember that. But I had a cool opportunity at the time to walk around with a T-shirt and get it signed by the entire Notre Dame squad. So at some point,
wow.
At some point, when I'm able to build like a full-fledged studio, I'm going to bring over the shirt that I still have framed at my mom's house with all the signatures from that 1989 Notre Dame football team.
Wow. Dropping a Ned Bolkar. That's
Ned Bolkar.
Quite the name drop. Yeah.
We also thought at the time that we were getting, I forget who my mom thought the player was. It might have been like Alan Pinkett. We thought we were getting Alan Pinkett's autograph, and instead it was, you remember Todd Light, former defensive
sure.
back? It was mm-hmm. Todd Light's dad who signed my shirt at the time.
That's wonderful.
So,
That's
but charming. Yeah, Rick Meyer, Rocket Ishmael, Chris Zorich, a bunch of names of
Who's
the past
who?
For Notre Dame. Yeah, I have that back at home, and at some point want to bring it over here, but just a great memory to be down there for that game.
I couldn't tell you exactly, and maybe this wasn't your first time either, your first game. I'm trying to remember if I had gone to an SC game or a UCLA game growing up in Southern California when I was really young. I remember I went to old LA Rams games when they played at the Big A in Anaheim.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Dodger games all the time, but I don't know if I went to a game. The first game I can remember was when I was 14 or 15. Going to it was the 1999 season, so it would have been the 2000 Rose Bowl. And that was Stanford, Wisconsin. That's a Ron Dayne, Brooks Bollinger, Wisconsin team. Barry Alvarez coaching. On the other side, it's Ty Willingham, who fresh off of beating Notre Dame, gets hired by Notre Dame a year later, 2001. But that game was such a dud to me that it didn't really kickstart anything for me college football. I always liked watching college football, but attending that game, there wasn't a lot of juice to it. And it took going to Oregon a couple years later. You know, my first game at Oregon was Oregon USC in 2001. And there was the fun of, you know, my friends at USC watching the Trojans. And then Oregon had that magical season in 2001. But I remember going to that game, sitting in the end zone. And the reason why it's particularly funny and weird to me now is I went with my friend Monty. Not a lot of Montys out there.
Yeah, sure.
And now I'm a dumb college football podcaster, and my friend Monty is the GM of the Sacramento Kings. But I remember going with Monty and his dad, Kevin. Great, great, great people. And just funny to think about the different paths our lives have taken since that game. But that was... It was like a 1910, 1909, 17-9, something like that. Not a fun game to
Back
watch.
In the day of, yeah.
So they say your first time is not always your best time. And for me, kind of true.
I also went maybe the earliest Notre Dame game.
It might have been Troy Walters as well. Might have been a huge Troy Walters year.
Wow. I think the earliest Notre Dame game I can remember going to, we went to a Notre Dame Tennessee game.
Knoxville or South Bend?
In South Bend.
Okay.
And sat right behind the Tennessee band.
Hmm. Cool.
Not really when you're that close to them.
Well,
not
I don't
really.
Know how the sound works. I guess it can be loud and interrupting. Yeah.
No, it's not even that it's loud and interrupting. It's that it's the same song over and over again. Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Rocky Top. A great song in college football lore. Not so much when you're right next to it for an entire game.
I didn't recognize how annoying that can be until going to an Oklahoma Holiday Bowl against Oregon and going to SC games. Because I would go to the USC games with my friends before the Oregon school year started, because Oregon was on quarter, so we wouldn't go till late September. So I would go to early games with my buddies at USC, and they just play that same damn song. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, over and over.
Dun, 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 dun. But all the same, I loved going to USC games. They're very fun.
Well, Daniel, this has been a fun show.
Yeah.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com is the email. Write in, give us your experience. Love to hear it. Love to hear what you're giving your college football Valentine to. If you don't have the email, which I'm assuming most people do in this year 2021, but you can also look us up on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the usual hotspots. We've got clips that go up to YouTube. Haven't posted a lot there lately, but we do have designs on spinning that up and getting a little bit more hot and heavy with it, Dan, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward here in this new year, we also have a Patreon at verballers.com. Like I've been saying, we took a little bit of a breather towards the end of January, but I want to say next week, I have to look at the production schedule that we've got.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Next week, we're going to start up with some of our off-topic stuff that has been very much in high demand.
Yeah. We've got some early internet stuff tossing around, some more video game stuff. We'll see. We got a lot. I mean, I think a lot of people responded very well to when we had Felder on the show to talk about food. So that's certainly going to happen at some point in the spring, another dedicated food and drink show. All sorts of things happening.
For sure. So check it out. Verballers.com is where you can find more about our Patreon.
What if I insist that we just do a podcast industry show and just turn that microphone on you and your thoughts?
No, man. You probably don't want to do that.
Yeah, I know. It's true. I think if people are subscribing on Patreon, they want Deeply Nerdy Ty.
That would be the best way to access Deeply Nerdy Ty.
Great. Love it.
Yeah. So we could talk, but we've got a bunch of off-topic stuff that we've...
And if you're in the Patreon Discord, tell us what off-topics we should consider.
For sure. All right. Well, look, we wish everyone a happy Valentine's Day. Don't know what that looks like for all y'all as we... continue forward in this goofy pandemic of a year and a half, of whatever, however long it's been now. But wish you well. Stay safe. Stay warm, Daniel. Chicagoland.
It's tough. I've got a rough road ahead.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt. Yeah. Stay healthy. Stay warm. Stay solid.
Peace.